the market sentiment just screams crash, you know, it screams panic, and it's fueled by these recent sharp dips. But if you actually zoom out and look at the data, it suggests something far more complex.
And frankly, far more frustrating for most people.
Exactly. We're about to dive deep into why this forecasted period of, well, boring market behavior, this slow sideways grind, is actually the exact environment that institutional investors prefer.
Yeah, the real pivot point wasn't some chaotic sudden crash. It was a subtle shift in the market's structural integrity.
Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're navigating what is maybe the toughest psychological topic in the crypto space right now: Bitcoin consolidation and, more importantly, cycle defense. We've taken a really comprehensive look at a number of sources analyzing this recent price breakdown and the critical shift away from that, you know, aggressive bullish expectation to a purely defensive strategy.
And it's such a crucial shift to understand, especially if you're looking to be well-informed rather than, you know, just emotionally reactive. Our mission today isn't to predict the next all-time high. It's to help you prepare for every potential outcome using key data metrics. We're using these sources as a kind of detailed map, not a set of crystal ball prophecies.
And we have a really clear three-part roadmap to follow for this deep dive. We'll start by unpacking the critical significance of the $100,000 price break.
All right.
That was the level that, for our intents and purposes, fundamentally changed everything about the market structure and those long-term expectations we all had.
Then we're going to dedicate some serious time to discussing why protecting your capital rather than, you know, seeking immediate fast gains is absolutely the smartest move you can make right now.
Which is so hard for people to hear.
It's so hard. And this means understanding why the expected market boredom is actually a feature, not a bug, for large-scale capital rotation.
And then finally, we're going to break down six massive macro and on-chain indicators. We're looking at everything from the end of quantitative tightening, which is a huge macro pivot, all the way down to the network's realized price.
And we'll use all of those factors to map out three highly detailed scenarios for the next year, which should allow you to position yourself defensively starting today.
Okay, so let's start with the event that really forced this defensive posture. On December 1st, Bitcoin dipped pretty significantly. It fell from around 91,000 down to 84,000 in a really quick, unsettling move.
Yeah, that was a wake-up call for a lot of people.
It was a wake-up call, but the real significance, as the sources point out, isn't just that drop. It's the failure to hold a much higher prior level.
Exactly. The immediate $7,000 drop was painful, for sure. But the fundamental story is the structural failure that happened before it.
The failure to hold $100,000.
The failure to hold 100K. That wasn't just some round number for speculators. It was a line in the sand for long-term capital.
You know, we hear about these psychological barriers all the time, 50K, 100K. But why was this specific figure considered such a foundational support level that its failure basically redefined the entire cycle?
Because $100,000 wasn't just floating out there in isolation. It represented a major psychological benchmark, sure, but crucially, it coincided with the breach of key long-term technical indicators at the same time.
Right.
And for institutional investors who have to report performance and manage risk based on these defined market structures, that kind of confluence, that's the trigger.
So which indicators specifically were tied into that 100K level? This is where we need to get really specific about that idea of technical integrity.
So we're looking at two major averages that basically define the health of a yearly cycle.
Okay.
The first is the one-year, 365-day moving average. And the second, which is a little less noisy, is the 50-week average.
Right, the long-term trend.
Exactly. Long-term capital uses these averages for one reason. They filter out all the daily volatility and tell you where the collective market is positioned over the past year.
So it's the big picture.
It is the big picture. And when the price is consistently holding above that 365-day average, you are structurally in an expansionary bull phase, period.
So once the price dipped below and then failed to reclaim that level, meaning the 365-day average was now sitting above the current trading price, the whole technical outlook just fundamentally shifted in the eyes of risk managers.
Precisely. The moment that structure broke, the technical environment flipped. The probability of Bitcoin setting new, immediate all-time highs just plummeted.
And the probability of a correction went up.
The probability of entering a prolonged digestion, or a correction phase, suddenly rose above 50%. And historically, this isn't new. Consistently trading beneath the one-year moving average has pretty much always marked the beginning of either a deep correction or a full-on structural bear cycle.
So it's a signal that the environment has moved from, let's say, growth to something more like accumulation potential.
That's the perfect way to put it.
So does breaking that 365-day average definitively lock us into a multi-year bear market? Or is this more of a heightened state of caution?
It signals a structural cycle shift is likely, increasing the probability of no new immediate highs.
Okay.
So given that structural damage we just talked about, the failure of the cycle's integrity at 100K, the smartest move right now is just slowing down.
Mm.
You have to prioritize protecting your capital over speculating on a quick recovery. Being defensive is it's absolutely necessary while this long, maybe painful digestion period unfolds.
And that just goes against the entire ethos of the crypto retail market, which is, you know, completely obsessed with fast, huge gains. It's so hard to tell people to slow down when they feel like they're missing out on something.
That feeling is the trap. It is precisely the trap.
Mm-hmm.
The key idea here, and it requires a lot of discipline, is simple. Abandon prediction.
Okay.
Abandon prediction based on your old expectations. You have to follow the data and the current market structure, not the emotional blueprint you have from previous bull market peaks.
Right, because this cycle just didn't generate that same kind of frothiness required for a blow-off top.
It never did. The structure never formed.
And what the data overwhelmingly suggests now is that we are entering a long window of, quote, chop and consolidation. And this is going to be frustrating, maybe even infuriating, for retail traders who really thrive on that high volatility and those massive percentage swings.
Oh, it will be. If you are sitting there waiting for the, you know, classic Bitcoin explosive leg up and that euphoric blow-off top that we saw in 2017 and 2021, you just have to reset your expectations.
I'm not coming.
That scenario likely won't materialize this time because the necessary market structure, specifically, that sustained retail leverage and overwhelming euphoria, it never even formed. We hit resistance and we just folded structurally.
So instead of that terrifying fast 80% crash that Bitcoin is kind of famous for,
yeah.
What should we be bracing ourselves for psychologically? What does this feel like?
It's a different kind of pain. We should expect a slower, more controlled downtrend, and that's followed by a long, almost boring accumulation phase that just feels like grinding sideways for months.
A slow bleed.
It's a slow bleed. This is the digestion period where the market works through all the high leverage, the disappointed expectations, and the structural weakness. But it does it very, very slowly.
That slow grind, I mean, that sounds like maximum psychological pain for the individual trader who's looking for immediate returns. Why is that kind of structural boredom actually preferred by institutional capital?
And this is where we have to separate institutional dynamics from retail psychology.
Right.
Institutional investors, they fundamentally avoid chaos. They require stability, predictable liquidity, and most importantly, they need time to rotate massive amounts of capital.
We're talking billions.
We're talking tens of billions, and they need to do it without catastrophic slippage. They need large, stable order books to enter and exit efficiently. A flash crash causes total chaos and prevents them from filling those large orders strategically.
So in other words, they don't want the price to drop 50% in 3 days. They'd rather it decline 25% over 6 months because that allows them to quietly build their positions.
Exactly. From their perspective, Bitcoin, even at 85,000, is already trading at a significant discount. It offers great long-term value. But, and this is a huge but, that doesn't mean you should be trying to time the bottom by, you know, YOLOing into every single dip.
That's just speculation.
Yeah, it's pure directional speculation. The prudent approach, until we see real macro strength return, is a small, steady dollar cost averaging approach. It's all about methodical accumulation during these periods of stability, not chasing volatility.
So why is this slow consolidation environment so much better for institutional capital than a chaotic crash would be?
Institutions prefer predictability and stable liquidity for effective large-scale capital rotation.
Okay, let's dive deep into the specific metrics now that reinforce this whole defensive posture. Several long-term indicators are suggesting that the cycle peak is either definitively behind us or we're in a much deeper correction than most people want to admit.
Mm.
And understanding these metrics should directly shape your strategy moving forward.
Yeah, let's begin with the Bitcoin realized price. For anyone who tracks on-chain data, this is arguably the most foundational metric because it tells us the network's collective pain threshold.
Can you re-explain the realized price, but maybe focus on its power as a capitulation signal, not just its technical definition?
For sure. The realized price calculates the average acquisition cost of every single Bitcoin that is currently moving on the network.
So what the average person paid?
Basically, yeah. Think of it as the network's average cost basis. It tells you the price the average investor paid for their coins. So when the spot price dips below this level, it means the majority of the network is officially underwater.
And where is that critical realized price level sitting right now?
It sits pretty close to $56,000.
Wow.
And historically, revisiting this specific zone marks the true, painful bear market bottom. This condition, where the market price falls below 56K, signifies that the average holder across the entire network is statistically facing losses.
That is the textbook definition of blood in the streets.
Yeah.
It's a complete sentiment reversal from where we were just a few months ago.
It is the absolute moment that fear peaks. Capitulation hits its maximum, and coins are typically flushed out of weak hands and into strong, patient hands.
So reaching 56,000 would feel absolutely terrible in real time. The financial news would be apocalyptic.
Oh, it would be awful. But statistically, that is the moment when the probability of upside finally flips back above 51% for the patient long-term accumulator. It is the ultimate opportunity zone.
Okay, so let's contrast that historical baseline with some of the, you know, unrealistic expectations that were set by things like the terminal price model, which projected heights we clearly never even got close to.
Right, and that's a key part of the psychological reset here. The terminal price model, which is derived from really reliable long-term data like CoinDays Destroyed,
which tracks old coins moving.
Exactly. It projected a potential cycle top near an astonishing $287,000.
I mean, that's just a massive figure. And the failure to come anywhere close to that is a key piece of this puzzle. This wasn't just a minor disappointment. It was a fundamental failure to achieve cycle euphoria.
And that failure to hit that euphoric band just confirms that the market never entered a full strength blow-off phase, you know, the kind fueled by aggressive retail speculation.
Yeah.
This confirms the cycle was fundamentally different. It was more controlled, more institutionalized than prior peaks. And the disappointment we all saw when 100K broke just confirms the lack of that underlying speculative momentum.
You know, I still wrestle with expecting these sophisticated models to hit these kind of magical targets. It's a very human tendency to anchor onto those really high numbers, even when the market structure is telling you a completely different story. So that's my vulnerable admission for the day.
And that's such an important insight for all of us. The sources really stress that we have to use these models reactively, not prescriptively. If your entire trading strategy relies on a model hitting some magical target, you are just positioned for disappointment. They are gauges of potential, not guarantees of reality.
So moving on to institutional flows,
yeah.
We've seen all the headlines screaming about, you know, monumental institutional sell-side pressure recently, which tends to lead to retail panic. But the data on the exchange-traded funds, the ETFs, that provides some necessary context here, right?
It provides absolutely essential context. While all that headline-driven panic is rampant, the institutional ETFs have only reduced their total holdings by about 5% from their peak.
Their peak was 1.27 million BTC.
Yep.
And they've only come down about 5% from that.
Only 5%. I mean, that is a remarkably controlled rebalancing figure, given the kind of volatility we've experienced.
It really is. And until we see those ETF flows materially break down, and by that I mean sustained aggressive selling that pushes that reduction towards, say, 15 or 20%, this is more accurately described as portfolio rebalancing and risk management.
Not a panic exit.
Not a panic exit. Earlier in the year, these same institutions were absorbing massive profit-taking from early adopters and OG whales. Now the flow equilibrium is simply shifting sideways. It's reflecting caution, not a total collapse.
Okay, this next metric brings us back to some macro fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin priced in gold. What does this relative correlation tell us about capital rotation?
This one is fascinating. It suggests a really crucial rotational dynamic. When gold trends upward aggressively, Bitcoin often follows, but with a delayed and typically more aggressive move.
So the two assets are often viewed as like alternative safe haven or inflation edge plays. And it shows that patient long-term capital tends to rotate between them.
That's the idea. They share macro drivers, but their responsiveness is completely different, especially during periods of stress.
How so?
Well, both are ultimately driven by these long-term macro forces, you know, global liquidity cycles and long-term inflation expectations. But Bitcoin, being the smaller, more volatile, and newer asset, it remains far more sensitive to fast-moving, speculative risk sentiment.
So that difference creates these meaningful temporary deviations in their trends, which analysts watch for early signs of capital shifting back into high-risk assets.
Exactly.
Now, for what I think is maybe the most massive macro pivot in this entire analysis, the ending of quantitative tightening, or QT. This is a game changer that is so often missed in the day-to-day crypto discussion.
It is huge. On December 1st, the Federal Reserve effectively announced that quantitative tightening is ending, or at the very least being significantly wound down.
And just for our listeners, QT is basically the central bank actively reducing market liquidity by shrinking its balance sheet, removing dollars from the system.
Right. So ending it reverses that entire process. It leads to liquidity stabilization and eventually expansion.
Let's focus on the historical precedent here. Mm-hmm. What happened the last few times the Fed reversed course on liquidity tightening like this?
Every single previous instance of the Fed ending QT, we saw this in 2010, 2012, and again in 2019, it led to huge sustained Bitcoin bull rallies afterward.
Why? What's the mechanism?
Because the relentless pressure of liquidity tightening just stopped. Once that squeeze is off, capital can finally find its way back into riskier assets.
Whoa. I mean, imagine scaling this liquidity shift to what it means for global markets. The central bank is signaling the environment is stabilizing after a really intense period of financial pressure. That's a significant moment of wonder right there.
It really is.
And Bitcoin often reacts months later, right? Not immediately. That liquidity has to flow through credit markets first. We could be at a really quiet, almost unexciting transition point right now.
We are. And it's a transition that requires maximum patience from everyone. The key takeaway is that the environment for capital is improving structurally, even if the current risk appetite, which is reflected in the price, is lagging pretty severely.
The pressure is off, but the enthusiasm hasn't arrived yet.
That's a perfect summary.
Okay, finally, let's look at the U.S. Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI. This gauge of manufacturing and economic health has been in recessionary territory, so below 50 for a long time now. Why is this persistent economic weakness such a key factor for Bitcoin's performance?
It matters intensely because of relative performance and investor confidence. When the PMI is negative, which indicates a shrinking or weak economy, traditional non-speculative equities and commodities tend to overshoot.
So investors pile into defensive, you know, perceived safer sectors within that weak economy.
They do. Meanwhile, what happens to the highly speculative risk-on assets like Bitcoin in that same environment?
They lag.
They tend to lag significantly. And that explains exactly what we've seen in the past few quarters. Bitcoin has fundamentally underperformed relative to the amount of theoretical liquidity that was present.
And that's just because the pervasive risk appetite you need to buy volatile assets was missing because of all the economic uncertainty. So if the PMI finally starts showing some sustained recovery in the coming quarters, signaling improved economic health and rising confidence, we could see a really powerful delayed reaction in Bitcoin.
Precisely. If that PMI starts recovering, Bitcoin could play significant catch-up as risk capital floods back in. But until that hard data improves, our defensive strategy has to be calibrated to weaker macro demand and the expectation that Bitcoin will probably underperform traditional safe haven assets.
So if that $56,000 realized price zone gets hit, what does the confluence of the ending QT and the weak PMI suggest about the long-term outlook?
It confirms a complex market recalibration, signaling an accumulation zone, not a systemic collapse.
Okay, so the sources present three clear potential paths for Bitcoin over the next year, and they really strongly reinforce that core defensive strategy.
You have to prepare for all of them, not just the one you wish would happen.
Right. Let's start with scenario one, the bull rebound. This is the optimistic path. It represents, you know, the high end of possible outcomes based on historical liquidity injections. Okay, so what needs to happen right now for this optimistic scenario to actually materialize and reverse the structural damage that we've been talking about?
This path assumes a really rapid, short-lived recovery from the current weakness. It requires Bitcoin to break through resistance levels quickly and immediately enter a new expansion phase.
But critically, this scenario demands some significant, immediate positive shifts in investor behavior and macro flows that we just aren't seeing yet.
We aren't.
So what are the necessary triggers that would even make a bull rebound plausible?
It would require two major, almost simultaneous shifts. First, that improving global liquidity from the end of QT has to filter through to speculative assets much faster than anyone expects.
Okay.
Second, we would need to see strong, sustained, positive ETF inflows that turn net buying positive very, very fast. That would indicate a huge institutional re-engagement.
And finally, a rapid, undeniable turnaround in the macro environment, especially that US PMI we just talked about, signaling the end of all these recessionary fears.
So a lot has to go right and go right quickly.
Okay, so scenario two. The summer 2026 mini bear is tagged by the source analysis as the most likely expectation. And this speaks directly to that period of boredom and accumulation we outlined earlier.
It does. And this sounds like the scenario where traders are going to feel the most psychological pain.
Maximum frustration, but minimum directional volatility.
That's exactly right. This is where Bitcoin just grinds sideways and lower, forming a long, choppy consolidation range instead of a dramatic, fast crash.
So it avoids the catastrophic 80% drop, but it delivers maximum psychological attrition because nothing seems to work. Neither longing nor shorting aggressively. It's just chop.
It's just chop. It's a mini bear where volatility compresses dramatically and the price just meanders aimlessly, slowly trending down towards that accumulation zone.
Right. It meanders until deeper macro clarity arrives or until the supply side of the network is finally finished shaking out all the weak hands.
Correct. And this scenario perfectly matches the analysts' expectation for a prolonged, tolerable digestion period that institutional capital needs to position itself. For the patient investor, this is actually the ideal setup for long-term accumulation and strategic positioning.
Because it offers reliable entry points without the immediate risk of a flash crash.
Exactly.
And then finally, scenario three, the year-long bear. This is the traditional painful crash scenario that everyone fears.
This one signals a traditional, deeply painful, multi-quarter bear market. This would involve a much deeper and more extended drawdown, potentially lasting well into late 2026.
And pushing prices far below that $56,000 realized price for a sustained period. This would be absolutely brutal for sentiment and network adoption.
It would be.
So what specific, almost catastrophic conditions would be required for this lower probability scenario to materialize, especially given the macro tailwind of QT ending?
Well, this scenario is really predicated on a significant worsening of other macro conditions. We'd need to see a severe, unpredicted liquidity event. Maybe the Fed has to reverse course on QT because of some unanticipated inflation pressure or a major geopolitical shock.
And you'd also need to see weakness in the ETF demand.
Major sustained and aggressive weakness in ETF demand, pushing those institutional holding reductions well beyond the 5% we're seeing today.
And if this kind of structural damage actually happens, what's the silver lining for the extremely patient long-term holder?
Well, if this happens, sentiment just collapses entirely. It forces a systemic cleansing event that completely resets the market.
A full flush.
A full flush. And that sets the stage for a stronger, more sustainable long-term recovery after enough structural damage is done and all of the tourist capital has capitulated. It's that necessary, painful purification that very few people want to experience, but it creates the cleanest foundation for future expansion.
So which of these scenarios, then, offers the absolute best long-term opportunity for patient new capital that's entering the market today?
The mini bear, scenario two, offers the most reliable accumulation chances, especially when you're targeting that $56,000 realized price zone.
So what does this entire deep dive mean for you, the listener, right now? How do we synthesize these six complex metrics and three potential scenarios into one clear mandate?
The big idea, really, is that this market is undergoing a complex recalibration. It's being driven by structural data points and institutional flow dynamics, not a systemic, uncontrolled collapse like we've seen in the past.
The cycle is correcting, but its foundation remains stable.
It does.
The structural shift that happened beneath 100K, that failure of the expansion phase, and the absence of the euphoric blow-off top, that redefined the expected timeline and the volatility profile of this entire cycle.
We are in a slow, controlled market digestion period.
But, and this is the critical part, the underlying macro drivers are actually turning positive.
They are. The stabilizing influence of the ETF holdings, which signals control, not panic, combined with that massive macro pivot of ending quantitative tightening, suggests the cycle's engine is fundamentally intact. It's just delayed and redefined.
So the market is shifting from aggressive expansion to a quiet, boring accumulation phase.
Exactly.
The structural damage is clear. the institutional preference for boredom and stability is clear, and that high probability accumulation zone near the $56,000 realized price is clearly identified by the network's own cost basis.
And so the strategy remains simple. Defense first, methodical, steady accumulation second. Follow the data to protect yourself from all those unnecessary emotional losses that are tied to chasing old, unattainable bull market expectations.
Preparation over prediction has to be your mantra right now.
It has to be.
We've covered the technical damage, the institutional strategy of patience, and that high probability accumulation target of 56,000. It is a complicated, slow-moving picture.
For sure.
So, for your final provocative thought, given that the Federal Reserve has ended QT, immediately introducing more liquidity into the system, but the U.S. PMI remains stubbornly weak, what existing sector in the traditional market do you predict will be the first to reflect these new, looser liquidity conditions, leading Bitcoin to finally play catch-up? Think about where that capital flows first, you know, before it gets all the way out to high-risk assets.
That is a fascinating question because it defines the lag period that we all need to be watching. If we look at the historical flow of capital when it leaves the central bank's reverse repo facility, the easiest, most desperate capital, it often finds its way into high-yield, short-duration assets first.
Yeah.
So I would predict we will see the recovery begin in something like high-yield corporate debt or maybe emerging market bonds.
Yeah.
These are the sectors that just soak up easy liquidity and are typically the first step before capital starts moving out the risk curve toward speculative tech stocks and then finally to Bitcoin.
So that's the canary in the coal mine to watch for.
That's the one. We hope this knowledge helps you prepare rather than merely predict what comes next.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.